Guardian Unlimited.
Hello, this is News Desk. I'm John Dennis. It's Tuesday, October the 23rd. Today, Hillary Clinton tells us that if she reaches the White House, she'd be prepared to give up some of the presidential powers claimed by George Bush. As wildfires sweep California, celebrities flee.
Almost 300,000 people have been evacuated.
Not Arnie, obviously. And as scientists warn that the world's carbon output is rising faster than ever, Gordon Brown's preparing for a U-turn on Britain's commitment to renewable energy sources. Hillary Clinton, the front runner in the race to be the Democratic presidential candidate, says that if she becomes president, she'll conduct a review of the powers that have been accumulated by George Bush. To mark the launch today of Guardian America, a new online version of The Guardian for US users, she spoke to its editor, Michael Tomasky.
Well, I think it is clear that the power grab undertaken by the Bush-Cheney administration has gone much further than any other president and has been sustained for longer. Other presidents like Lincoln have had to take on extraordinary powers but would later go to the Congress for either ratification or rejection. But when you take the view that they're not extraordinary powers but they're inherent powers that reside in the office and therefore you have neither obligation to request permission or to ask for ratification, we're in a new territory here.
Right.
And I think that I'm going to have to review everything they've done because I've been on the receiving end of that. There were a lot of actions which they took that were clearly beyond any power the Congress would have granted or that, in my view, was inherent in the Constitution. There were other actions they've taken which could have obtained congressional authorization, but they deliberately chose not to pursue it as a matter of principle.
Will health reform come first in your administration before the 2010 midterms, or will you start smaller and lead up to that?
It will be my highest priority as soon as I am inaugurated.
Hillary Clinton. And you can hear a longer version of that interview at guardianamerica.com, where you can also find out how Hillary is wooing Matt Drudge, whose website, The Drudge Report, did so much damage to Bill Clinton when he was president. Also on Guardian Unlimited today, tragedy in the Algarve. Three Britons and one German drowned yesterday on the Portuguese coast. They were trying to save the lives of three children who had been swept out to sea. Read the latest on that at guardian.co.uk. On Comment is Free, George Monbiot argues that while governments aren't perfect, libertarians and others who rage against regulations are bleeding us dry. And at guardian.co.uk/arts, Sam Wollaston interviews the comedian Paul Merton. Also on Guardian Unlimited, elephants electrocuted after beer-fueled rampage. That's at guardian.co.uk/world. Gordon Brown's being advised today by the Secretary of State for Business, John Hutton, that the government should abandon UK targets to expand renewable energy sources such as wind and solar power. Britain should also get our European allies to set lower targets, according to the strategy outlined in documents leaked to The Guardian. Environment editor John Vidal has the details.
Back in March, Tony Blair, with a lot of other European governments, signed up to a minimum of 20% of energy from renewables by 2020. It now seems that Gordon Brown is trying to roll them back.
Leaked documents seen by The Guardian show that the government is planning to scrap these targets. Why do they want to do that?
On one level, it's about cost. They think that to reach this 20% target is going to cost them an absolute fortune. And with Gordon Brown in charge, I think Mr. Hutton is very aware that it won't go down too well. I think the other problem is that there's a big element within the Department of Business which is wedded to the idea not of renewables but of nuclear and of using market trading forces to reduce emissions.
What would happen if these targets were abandoned?
Well, for a start, you'd undermine the whole renewables industry, which is taking off, is doing quite well, and is set to expand quite enormously over the next 20 years because it has the security of that commitment by Blair of a 20% target. So it knows that it can go into offshore wind or marine tidal energy with the absolute certainty that the government is going to want it. As soon as it starts dismantling it, then you let in uncertainty and then they won't get the investment, whatever. And that means that you're going to go towards nuclear even more.
And although these targets are expensive and fraught with difficulties, they're not unattainable, are they?
No, the extraordinary thing is that, I mean, Germany in the last 5 years, 6 years, has increased its renewable energy mix by 8%. It's now up to 10%, 9, 10%. Britain in that time has gone absolutely nowhere. Britain still is at 2%. Germany is racing ahead, and this is the problem. And what Brown and Hutton seem to be wanting to do is to undermine Germany. And that's why the papers which we've got suggest that they're going to work with Poland, France, maybe Italy, to try and undermine the German position.
You seem to be pretty sure, John, that Gordon Brown will accept this advice from John Hutton and duck out of Britain's obligations.
I think there's another agenda going on. I think that Brown has never actually got climate change. I don't think that he wants to think about something which he thinks is a long way ahead. Why should he, as an economist, effectively spend all this money? You know, there are much more important things he would say. And despite Stern, despite all kinds of other economists saying that, no, unless you spend now, you're going to have to spend far, far more later on, he is taking the short-term political view. And I think that he is now trying to roll back some of the stuff which Tony Blair agreed to on the international stage. And one of the intriguing things about these documents suggests that Blair went onto the international stage to become a world climate change leader because Brown would not let him on the national stage.
What about the government's ambition to introduce more nuclear power?
Basically, it's in a bit of a mess at the moment. They're very, very worried about the legal challenge, probably from Greenpeace. They are worried about the lack of inspectors. They're worried about the timing, all kinds of things. They've got a lot to do in a very, very short time. Well, yesterday, we had the news that 20% of Britain's nuclear power is off stream anyway because of the crumbling old stations which they've got. In other words, here is a power source which isn't exactly working that well.
Meanwhile, scientists at the Global Carbon Project say that carbon emissions are accumulating in the atmosphere quicker than they'd expected.
Well, this is the other extraordinary thing. It's the same day as we get Gordon Brown and John Hutton contemplating removing the targets for renewable energy, we get the world scientists, I mean, absolutely the top guys, the guys who got the Nobel Prize last week, saying it's actually far, far worse and it's happening far faster and the Earth ecosystems cannot cope with this. The land systems, the forestry and the oceans are not soaking up the carbon which they thought they would. In other words, the speed of which is happening is much faster than previously thought, and this is very, very bad news indeed.
John Vidal, many thanks. Coming up, our reporter in California prepares to evacuate his family as wildfires rage towards their home. Good news for parents who can't keep tabs on their children, a coat with a GPS tracking device attached. And Kevin McCarra previews tonight's Champions League football. But first, don't you hate it when you buy something simple like a vegetable or a piece of fruit and it comes wrapped in plastic and cardboard? Well, there's been a survey of the unnecessary packaging on goods sold by our leading supermarkets. The worst offenders were Marks & Spencer and Lidl. The research was commissioned by the Local Government Association, whose Richard Stokoe spoke to me earlier.
The report which the Local Government Association has commissioned from the British Market Research Bureau was looking at buying a shopping basket of common food items from about 8 retailers. The main reason we were looking at this was to see when people are trying to recycle more and councils are trying to recycle more, whether supermarkets need to do a bit more to help people reduce the amount they're throwing away, especially into landfill. And what we have discovered with this is that there's still a lot to be done by the major supermarket retailers, in particular Lidl and Marks & Spencer's, who, while they have made lots of pledges to become greener, and they are doing so, there is still a way to go to make sure that as little as possible is sent to landfill in the future.
Can you give us some idea of how bad things are at M&S and Lidl?
For an example, the supermarket with the heaviest packaging as such was Lidl's, 800 grams, almost a bag of sugar's worth of packaging as such, while the contents of Marks & Spencer's baskets had the lowest level of packaging that could be recycled. Now, that was around about 60% that could be recycled, so 40% would have to go into landfill.
And which retailers use the least excessive packaging?
Well, not surprisingly, in some ways, what you find is that the market traders, for example, because they wrap things up in small paper bags and things like that, they actually have the lowest amount of packaging on their goods. The other ones would be your corner shops, your small traders who have separate smaller amounts of packaging on their fruit and vegetables and things like that. We also find that Asda is actually very good, and Sainsbury's aren't bad, and Tesco's aren't bad either. We want to work with these supermarkets, and we want people to have the information so that they can actually help councils and help supermarkets to be encouraged to reduce the amount of packaging they're actually using in their shopping and their supermarkets.
So as 40% of packaging used by leading supermarkets can't be recycled, who foots the bill for disposing of that?
Unfortunately for everyone, it's us, the council taxpayer. In the next few years, we are going to be seeing increasing amounts of taxes being put on every tonne of landfill that's disposed of. We already know that there's only about 9 or 10 years' worth of landfill left. And because of EU landfill directives as well, we are going to have to, by 2010 and 2013, actually hit targets for the amount that we don't throw into landfill and actually the amount we recycle. And if we don't hit those targets, which the government's own figures show that it's not going to happen, we're looking at extra fines on the councils who don't recycle as much as they have to, and that will then have to be passed on to the council taxpayer. The last estimate we saw was a National Audit Office report last year, which estimated that there'll be about an extra £200 million worth of fines, which would be levied on government, local government, and inevitably the taxpayer. So it's in the interest of both the councils, who don't really want to tax any more than they have to, and on local people to actually put pressure on supermarkets to encourage them to reduce the amount of packaging so that we can recycle more and so that we have less waste and therefore less taxes in the long term.
Richard Stokoe, many thanks. Wildfires are sweeping the coast of Southern California. 250,000 people have been urged to evacuate their homes. Here's what some of them are saying.
Unbelievably instantaneous. What was fine 1 minute was burning red flames the next minute because of the way the wind was going. It was spooky, it was walls of fire, and it was all around in moments. Instantaneous.
It's scary as heck. I have no idea what's going on. I mean, everywhere you look, the fires are burning and everything's just happening really fast. So you get in your neighborhoods and then they come through and tell you that you need to leave.
It's kind of scary. We're still trying to find information about where we live. We've been here about 9 in the morning, but I mean, they've taken good care of everybody. I mean, they've been spectacular here. So we're still trying to find information about Rancho Bernardo and certain areas, and especially where we live.
Governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, has declared a state of emergency.
Of course, when I was here at the day at lunchtime and we had a press conference and we looked at the fires and got the briefing here, we were concerned about making sure that all the people have everything that they need. We were concerned, do we have enough carts down here? Do we have enough blankets? Do we have enough food? Do we have the water? Do we have the baby formulas? Do we have the diapers? Do we have enough toilet papers? Do we have enough toilets? Do we have everything that we need for the people here so they can stay overnight here, because almost 300,000 people have been evacuated?
Our reporter in California is Dan Glaister. He says that although there are fires every year in Southern California, this year conditions are different.
The unique thing about them, I think, is that they stretch from San Diego on the Mexico border at the southern tip of California all the way up to Santa Barbara County, which is an hour's drive north of Los Angeles. Within 300 miles or whatever it is, there's a dozen significant fires burning. And throughout the area, the countryside is parched brush, really, and desert scrub. We're in the middle of a drought here, as most of the western U.S. is. Although we did have rain last weekend. Other than that, it's very, very dry, and it is a tinderbox.
Wildfires happen every year in that part of the world. Why are they particularly bad this year?
Because of the drought, really. That's the key thing. I mean, this drought's been going on for 4 or 5 years, but it's, I guess it's a cumulative thing. And the other thing is we're in the fire season, and the fire season is prompted by the Santa Ana winds, which are a desert wind that blows in. Now, they started off on Friday. We noticed the temperature rose, and you started to get this hot breeze on Friday. Now, by Sunday, it was a hot hurricane. It was a hot gale. They were gusting up to sort of 80, 90 miles an hour, the winds. And it was extraordinary. It was like opening a fan oven door with the fan blasting out at you. What they think caused the fire were power lines being brought down by the winds, which sparked off and set off fires, although they also say that there have been several instances of arson down near San Diego, which obviously doesn't help. The skies were brown from Saturday evening to Monday morning. You could see these brown swathes of sky. And, if I were to put a white piece of paper on my desk here, it would be covered with little bits of soot within a few minutes.
It sounds terrifying, Dan, actually. And this is affecting some pretty wealthy residential districts.
Yeah, well, it knows no boundaries. The person who died on Sunday in the fire was an immigrant trying to cross the border from Mexico. And at the other extreme, it's affecting the very shishi upmarket enclave of Malibu, where the celebrities traditionally have lived and still do live and is a familiar sight to most people. So you can see the sort of multi-million dollar homes being doused with fire retardant on the beach and, people speeding away with their chihuahuas on their laps. And I know that one of the most upmarket hotels in Santa Monica, which is where the celebrities like to stay, and I know that their rooms were filling up last night with people fleeing Malibu.
I'm not suggesting that you live in that sort of luxury, Dan, but your home is in the path of the fire.
Yeah, I'm actually about 5 miles from where the fire in Malibu is. So we're in a voluntary evacuation area here, which means on a scale of 1 to 10, if 10 is very bad and it's a mandatory, then we're on about number 5 at the moment. So last night we were going around nailing windows shut and doing things like that, which you're supposed to do, so the fire can't get blown through your home, coiling up hose pipes for the firefighters to use and making sure that all the hose pipes outdoors are connected to outdoor taps and things so that they can just come in and use them, or you can use them to put out spot fires. Packing our bags, loading the car up and just being ready to go.
How effective have the Californian authorities been in responding to this emergency?
They've been pretty good. I mean, they're pretty experienced. You know, there are various plans that are in place and they've got a pretty impressive array of aircraft and helicopters that they can deploy, wind conditions permitting.
Dan Glaister. Let's look now at today's papers. The Telegraph leads with another damning report into Britain's health. It quotes a government report that shows a 50% increase in childhood obesity over the past decade. The paper brands Britain, not for the first time, the sick man of Europe. Also on health, The Independent reports that Professor Julien Legrand, a government advisor, has drawn up a plan to improve Britain's health. Smokers would have to buy permits, companies would make employees take part in an exercise hour, food manufacturers would be banned from adding salt to processed foods, there'd be restrictions on the sale of alcohol in supermarkets, and free fruit for secondary as well as primary school children. In the Daily Express, Madeleine McCann yet again. Today, a tapas bar waiter's speculation dominates the Express's front page. Several of the papers report today the death of a man after a freak accident while recording a battle enactment for Channel 4's history show Time Team. A splinter from a wooden lance went through the man's helmet and pierced his eye socket. He died later in hospital. The Sun's got more criticism for the Prime Minister after his statement in the Commons yesterday. Gordon Brown urged MPs to approve the EU treaty with the exemptions that he's secured. The Prime Minister has rolled over in abject surrender, the Sun's leader column thunders. The front page of the Times today claims that car travel could be banned in and around the main Olympic sites at the 2012 Games in London. The paper says it's seen an early transport plan which it claims amounts to the country's largest peacetime logistical operation. The Daily Mirror and other papers say that the ITV is going to revive its popular News at 10 flagship show presented by Sir Trevor MacDonald. The paper says ITV wants to reassert its public service credentials after a week in which several high-profile shows were found to have rigged premium phone line public votes. And yes, the bongs will be back. Outrage in the Daily Mail, not for the first time obviously, as children as young as 10 get the power to sentence teenage criminals, it reports. It claims there's a pilot scheme operating in Preston in Lancashire to deal with young offenders that operates this system. And you can read a review of the papers every day, guardian.co.uk/wrap. For £250 plus £10 a month tracking charge, parents can keep track of their child's every move thanks to a jacket containing a global positioning system. Martin Taylor is sales director of AMS, that's the company that's made the GPS part of the garment. He says the coat's fabric had to be made extra tough in order to secure the tracking technology.
Well, essentially it's the mix between two technologies. One of them is from a company called Blade Runner, who have developed a jacket that's slash resistant, if you like. The other technology is a GPS tracking system that's made by a company called AMS, who have developed a personal GPS-based, satellite-based tracking system that actually fits in discreetly into the inside lining of the garment, if you like, so that it's very covertly installed into the jacket.
And how often does it allow parents to get updates on their child's whereabouts?
The parent can get updates as often as they require, and this is fully tailorable to their needs. So they can literally click on the site and make the settings for every 30 seconds, every minute, every 2 minutes, right up to every hour. that has implications on the battery life of the unit. It's a rechargeable unit.
How do parents get these updates?
In two ways. The full system is a web-based system. So they literally log on to the AMS website. They're given a secure logon and password that they can then pass on to friends, family, or even the emergency services if there is such an eventuality.
Is this technology expensive for parents?
Depends really what you consider expensive. The hardware itself is £199, and then there is a monthly charge of £10. The jackets themselves range from around £70 up to £250.
Might there be a problem in persuading children and teenagers to wear a jacket containing this tracking technology?
The actual device itself is virtually invisible to anyone. And also, of course, it does actually then allow the child greater freedom and greater independence, because literally the parent will hopefully feel great peace of mind and therefore allow the child greater independence and freedom.
The Guardian says today that these coats would be ideal for a certain type of overprotective, borderline paranoid parent with too much time on their hands. Is that about right?
Well, I don't know whether our market research suggests that. I mean, certainly the people that we expect to adopt this technology obviously are going to be early adopters, highly technologically driven, I suppose. You'd certainly need to be au fait with the web. If you care about your children, which I think most people do, for this sort of investment to give this level of protection, I don't think it's too much to ask that there could be a huge market out there for less paranoid people.
Martin Taylor, many thanks. Football, and it's the third instalment of Champions League group matches this week. There are three British teams in action tonight. The Guardian's chief football writer Kevin McCarris says it'll be business as usual for Manchester United, who are away at Dynamo Kiev.
I think they'll just play their normal attacking system with people like Giggs and Rooney and so on pushing forward, and they'll try and win this game. Kiev are the champions of Ukraine, and yet curiously they aren't the best team there, which is Shakhtar Donetsk, who are very, very rich and powerful, and having lost league last season, invested a lot of money. Dynamo Kiev are actually in sort of poor relations currently, and you would expect Manchester United to tidy up the group by getting 3 points tonight and making a perfect 9 in total from the first three games.
In today's Guardian, Kevin, you have some kind words for Manchester United striker Wayne Rooney. Is he maturing into the player everybody expected?
In a way, I think when you think of him as a teenager, that kind of intuitive, imaginative player, it's hard to sustain that. The sheer sort of struggle of being kicked and fighting week in, week out takes away that spontaneity. But he's a more knowledgeable player now. He's been played in various positions by Sir Alex Ferguson and learned the game, as it were. And I noticed that he'd scored in his last five games in a row for club and country, which he'd never done in his career. And I think that suggests that he's now, we hope, coming into his best years.
Arsenal play host to Slavia Prague tonight. Is it fair to say that Arsenal have exceeded expectations already this season with their form?
I think most people thought they'd be better, but not top of the Premier League. Arsenal were a team who were clearly getting better over the course of last season, but their kind of run of victories in the Premier League has come as a shock. But I guess once they got two or three on the board, the confidence grew. They're a very stylish team. However, they haven't been tested by a game yet against the likes of Chelsea or Manchester United or Liverpool, although games like that are coming up shortly. However, tonight shouldn't extend on too much. We're talking about the team who were runners-up in the Czech League last season, and you would expect Arsenal to make fairly efficient work of them this evening.
Kevin McCarra. Today's edition of News Desk was produced by Phil Maynard and Ian Chambers. I'm John Dennis. Thanks for listening.
Guardian Unlimited.